there's a verse in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam which describes how you experience the process of bhakti yoga and its effects. Bhakti Parishan Guru Varakti Anyak Chatra Chikate Kata. Bhakti gives you pleasure, gives you nourishment, and gives you detachment. Just as when you eat a good meal, you get pleasure, nourishment, and relief from the pangs of hunger. When you eat something sumptuous, no wonder do you have the stabs of hunger. Similarly, by performing devotional service to Krishna, the needed thing you feel is the cessation of material anxiety and the stabbing pain of material existence. That stabbing pain of material existence is due to unfulfilled desires. Having desires which will never be fulfilled in the material atmosphere. This is a very salient point that we should master. I think I've said it before. Just because you have desires doesn't mean that these desires will be fulfilled. You can get that into your head and heart. You'll save yourself a lot of problems. Yes, it is the normal thing for living entities to have desires, because desire is the symptom of the soul. It's the expression of the soul. But the soul's desires cannot be fulfilled in the material atmosphere. It feels natural to desire, but when you're desiring in the wrong place, you'll simply meet with frustration and then anger, bewilderment. We have to separate the ease and naturalness by which we have desires from the fulfillment of those desires. It's easy to desire, everyone knows that. Just happens. Desires well up in you. Desires exude from you without any effort. That's because the soul is desirous. The desire capacity doesn't come from matter. The mistake we make is that we see how easy desire springs forth from our existence, so then we speculate that fulfillment will also naturally spring forth from material existence. No. You have to see there are two things. There is desire, and there is the fulfillment of the desire. Most people don't have the clarity of mind and the sensory discipline to discriminate between these two things. They are two separate things. Desire and fulfillment of desire. Most people make a huge mistake, and this is what they pass down generation after generation, that it's so nice you have a desire, so it's going to happen. Mostly at least. You should try for that. They cannot see the difference between desire and the fulfillment. In the material world, you're free to desire all you want. That is your independence. But you cannot fulfill your desire satisfactorily. The attempt to fulfill material desires is fraught with hard labor and frustration because you're never completely fulfilled. Even momentarily when you think you are, very soon after you're disappointed. Some people get so frustrated with this process of desire and disappointment that they conclude the ultimate perfection must mean no desire, meaning no personhood. Bhakti Yoga, however, teaches you how to desire perfectly, how the spirit soul in perfection desires, how to bring the facilities of the spiritual world within material existence. Therefore, someone who is properly practicing Krishna consciousness does not reside in the material world. How are we going to get the clarity of vision and the sensory discipline to see that desire and the fulfillment of desire are two separate things? That requires some lifestyle adjustments, major renovation. You cannot just march on blindly through material life and spiritual religion on top, sprinkling religion on top. That's not going to give you the clarity of mind, the discipline, in order to see the big gap, the big canyon, the grand canyon between desire on one side and fulfillment of desire on the other. Have you ever been to the Grand Canyon? You look down the bottom? So just think, on the one side of the Grand Canyon, there's desire. On the other side is fulfillment. And in the middle, way down the bottom, are the wrecks of all the people who looked at the best. You know, there's no gap between them. You know, they just sally forth, oh, I have a desire. And they see fulfillment happening all around. And then, deep down in the canyon, they go, what was it? The Roadrunner cartoon? It was a coyote always fell. The Roadrunner was a good guy. It was a wily coyote. It wasn't wily enough. So that's what we're like. Wily Coyote always thought he had a clear shot at the Roadrunner, right? No problem, he had him this time. Scene after scene, and he would try so many things, you know, so many elaborate ways, you know. And he was always defeated, and the Roadrunner would just, you know, running by. So, we're always in dreamland. Everyone in which your life is quite dreamy, in case you haven't noticed. That dream happens because they cannot see the difference between desire and its fulfillment. They just see the two as just merged into one. I've got a desire, and so fulfillment is going to happen any moment. It's just around the corner. Yeah. That's why everyone has this false sense of confidence about material life, which can intimidate you if you don't know what you're doing. Maybe some of you, as developing devotees, have had an experience of talking to a materialist who's very confident about himself or herself, they're happy. They just reek of this confidence. We know what we're doing. We know everything. Whatever we don't know today, we'll know tomorrow, without a doubt. You know, you can really get shaken by that, unless you're firmly grounded. The knowledge of Bhagavad Dharma, Krishna consciousness. As your vision clears because of following Krishna conscious lifestyle, and as your senses become under control because of the discipline that you adhere to day after day, you begin to see that just like the earth has a north pole and a south pole, similarly, desire is one pole and fulfillment desires the other pole. There are different ends. And only in dreamland, in material life, do they come together, the two poles, desire and fulfillment. In the spiritual world, they are one and the same. All desires are perfectly fulfilled in the spiritual world. But it doesn't happen in the material world. We have some unconscious memories of the spiritual world. And it's natural for us to think that desire shall be fulfilled. Not in this realm, though. It doesn't work like that. It takes many births and deaths to learn this lesson and assimilate the purport. That's why Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, after many, many births and deaths, somebody becomes wise and realizes Vasudeva Sarvati Samaha Sudodava. Krishna is the source of all the energy. It is Krishna who fulfills the desires. Think about your status in fulfilling your desires on your own. What can you actually do about that except dream? You actually do not have the potency to fulfill your own desires. Many people find this point to be demeaning. What do you mean? I can't fulfill my desires. But just see how whenever you want to fulfill your desires, you have to go outside of yourself, rely on something outside of yourself. And that's why you become angry and frustrated in this world. Because you're dependent in every way on others to fulfill your desires. And naturally, other people and other things don't always act according to your plan, right? Doesn't work that way. Anytime you want to fulfill a desire, you have to depend on something or someone else. Therefore, in Krishna consciousness, we directly say we're dependent on Krishna. Materialists have to do that. Also, they have to depend on Krishna for fulfillment of their material desires. They just don't realize what's going on. They actually think it's by their prowess that they're achieving things. Except when there's disaster, that everybody falls to their knees and prays. Flying out from the airport, it was Friday in Texas, near the Mexican border, and airport security guard asked me, "Are you a priest?" I said, "Yes." Well, I was born Catholic. I said, "Oh, just born Catholic. What does that mean?" "Well, I don't do much about it right now. I mean, you know, yeah, I pray when I really have to. I don't need to get up. Otherwise." It's amazing how religious people get when there's disaster. When the September 11th disaster happened, so many people were suddenly praying to God, "Oh God, save me, save me." Even as a materialist, you're dependent. You have to go outside of yourself for everything. You're dependent on everyone and everything outside of you for your pleasure. Therefore, you struggle so hard to shape the world to your liking so that it becomes a more efficient environment for you to get your pleasure. You're willing to work hard for that. You expect fulfillment. Some expect artistic fulfillment. Others expect interpersonal fulfillment. Others respect social fulfillment, prestige, respect. You always have to deal outside of yourself. And therefore, you're left vulnerable No one likes to feel vulnerable. To have a comfortable feeling, to be open and vulnerable. But every time you want to fulfill your desires, you have to go outside of yourself. And therefore you are going out on the limb. Devotees consciously depend on Krishna. We admit our only independence is to choose whether to do things for Krishna's pleasure or not. But in either case, as a devotee or non-devotee, we're dependent on things outside of us. Therefore, a devotee prays, let me use my independence properly. That is my choice. Actually, everyone, even my very self, belongs to Krishna. So, when you're taking a meal, immediately you feel relief from hunger. It's like my lunch was late today, so I was getting hunger pangs. As soon as I started eating, the hunger pangs went away. What else do you experience? When you eat, you experience pleasure. But that pleasure fades with every mouthful. You ever notice when you're eating? Of course, taking prasad in a spiritual way is a bit different, quite a bit different. But still, those of you who simply eat Krishna prasad, you can remember what it's like to eat ordinary food. At first, things are satisfying. Yes. But then there's decreasing satisfaction with each bite because you become accustomed to it. And finally, you lose interest in the food. There's just that initial feeling of pleasure, which decreases and decreases. And therefore you put down your fork. Krishna consciousness, of course, Sanatana Dharma, the eternal nature, essence of living entity, which is to render service to Krishna. That does not decrease in its satisfaction. It actually increases. So the more you serve Krishna, the greater the taste will be. Krishna is ever fresh, and his service is ever fresh. It is not that you remain on the same level. No. The more you engage in devotional service, fresher you perceive Krishna consciousness to be. It's the opposite of what our material senses would expect. That the more you do something, the more you'll be tired of it. I remember during my university friends, some of my friends, during my university days, some of my friends, they would go for a, they would announce to everyone that they're going on like a month break from marijuana. Why? Who knows?
Someone just might be in a lesson.
Exactly. They want to, you know, I don't forget what the lingo they had for it, but it was to reduce their tolerance to it. So, you know, they announced like great austere yogis, this month I'm staying away from it. So that when they started again, there would be increased satisfaction, increased freshness. They really be knocked out. You have friends that also do that?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a known thing. Yeah. the Krishna consciousness, you don't have to do that. You don't have to take a break from Krishna consciousness in order to be able to appreciate it more a month later. I think I'll stop chanting so that when I start again, I'll really be impressed by the freshness. I don't have to do that. You want to taste the ever freshness of Krishna and his qualities and activities and name, then simply make efforts to increase your devotional service to Krishna. And then you'll always, when you chant Krishna's name, perceive things as ever fresh. Those things in relation to Krishna directly. We discussed that by performing bhakti yoga, number one, you'll feel relief from material distress. Number two, you'll feel pleasure. And number three, you'll feel satisfaction. A hungry person, when he or she eats, stops after feeling satisfied. Then you have to wait some hours before you can eat again. But in devotional service, you never stop. The satisfaction that you get from serving Krishna causes you to want to serve Krishna more. It's not that you have to wait. Okay, that was a real good meal I had. I'll have to wait about 4 or 5 hours before I can eat again. It's not like that in bhakti yoga, Krishna consciousness. I really did a lot of service past month, past 2 months. So now, they're back off and wait. Now, Krishna services are fresh. And if you perform bhakti yoga properly, you'll experience that. Please remember this. Devotional service to the Lord, bhakti prasanna bhakti. It is your direct perception of the Lord. Of course, you have to see Krishna as he agrees to be seen. And bhakti also gives you nourishment by your experience of the Lord. Your spiritual life becomes nourished, strengthened, enriched. You can see in your own spiritual life how you are acquiring these things: pleasure, satisfaction, and relief from material distress, material pangs. See if you are tasting the pleasure of devotional services ever fresh. See if you're feeling nourished and strengthened by your direct perception of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everyone is seeing Krishna, but not everyone realizes it. Any questions? In bhakti yoga, there is direct perception. But that's with the spiritual senses, not the material senses. Therefore, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Priyaksha Alamam Bhavanam Sasukam Kartanokya. This king of knowledge, this most secret of all secrets, gives direct perception of the self by the senses, by the spiritual senses. If you want to see how your spiritual senses are perceiving, then you see through the eyes of the Shastra and you'll be able to understand what's happening to you. Yes?
Thank you very much. Thank you for the class. given our, the nature of our particular mission at the moment, the preparation for going back to New Zealand, sometimes with this type of things that we're doing, it's easy to become a little bit more fraught and mechanical, and the freshness can dwindle. How can we, what can we do to try and avoid that, stay Krishna conscious and keep it fresh?
We pray to Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda every day, that let us discharge the present austerities so that we can make an effective outreach for others in the very near future. And remember why you're doing what you're doing. A very noble purpose to establish an ashram, to acquire vehicles for doing the highest welfare work for the people. So you have to remember why you're doing what you're doing. Short period of austerities. Look at him that way. Okay, how can you explain to me about those choices? How does it look? Give me an example.
You can choose what type of food you like.
But you have to eat. So you're like a prisoner. And they ask the prisoner, the jailer asks the prisoner, do you want your meal cold or warm? The prisoner says, I want it mine warm. Wow, this is really great. They give me a choice. What would you say about that choice?
Okay.
Would you be impressed by that? Would you be jumping up and down saying, these prisoners have a choice? Of course, some people like prison. I admit, persons like that. You never, yes? What do they say?
They just have to get back in. They just don't like to get released.
Why? Why? What do they say?
Because it's easy. You know, they don't have to make any particular choices that we can make for them.
It's hard to believe that people like that. Yeah, I met one young man. He was telling me, yeah, it's not bad in there, you know. They give you a pair of sneakers and jeans. I hear that. Yeah, everything's organized for you. You just watch TV all day. But to you, it all sounds ridiculous. There's no choices in jail. Now look at the material world the same way. There are actually no substantial choices. You're forced to have to eat, otherwise you die. And you're going to say, so I chose to go to McDonald's instead of Burger King. And the false ego actually feels very significant for making that choice. Maybe you can remember strolling down the street, where shall I go to eat? Some KFC today? Burger King? McDonald's? What do you think? You ask your friends. Is that really a significant choice? You have to eat. You have to serve your body. Further, more subtle is the fact that you're submitting to the modes of nature. Roger Moon, the mode of passion. The mode of passion is pushing you eat in a passionate way. Whether it's, you know, McDonald's or Burger King, that's not the real point. The point is the mode of passion is pushing you. Be passionate. So people make a big thing about their choices made within prison, within the imprisonment of Sri Guru Mahi, the three modes of mixed relationship. Friday night comes. Oh, I chose this girl! But actually what's happening, the mode of passion is pushing you. That's the main thing that's going on. The unimportant thing is that it's this one or that one. But the main thing is the mode of passion has enslaved you. But we're so foolish, we don't see that. We simply see, I chose this one, not that one. Not very important. Look at it in this way. It's a point I make in the book Perfect Escape. You have a choice of a limited range of possibilities according to the modes of material nature. But you make such a big thing about that so-called choice. You get really egotistical about it. Just like when you're watching television with remote control. Oh, I have so many choices. I'm in control. That show. You can't see how, for the most part, you're enslaved. So you have to understand that way. When the Shastra says, you basically have just one choice, whether to serve Krishna's spiritual energy or Krishna's illusory energy. It's not taking as important these minor aspects of choice, which we make such a big deal out of. It's not important when compared to the overall atmosphere of enslavement. Just like for a prisoner, you will not take seriously a prisoner who said, I got so much independence, you know, I can choose whether to have a cold meal or a warm meal. You were just, hey, you know, you're in prison, that's the reality. Or maybe the prisoner would get offended. What do you mean? We have choices there. In fact, because I've been a good prisoner for so long, they allowed me to move to another cell. I got a cell by myself. You would just say, hey, forget it. Just get out of prison, then we'll talk about free choice. No, I don't understand. I could choose. They told me because I was a model prisoner for 30 years, I could choose my own cell from all the cells in prison. You would not take the prison seriously. So that's why Mother Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam say you have no independence, meaning what you call facility to choose is just over some minor silly things. The main choice is simply whether you're going to serve Krishna or serve Krishna's illusionary. All else is just fine print. You understand? It's like, is it subtle? When you wake up in the morning, you could think, what will I wear today? That's up. What is my mood? Okay? Will this match my mood? You can make a big deal out of that choice. And advertising will make a big deal out of it. When you think about it, which no one does, you're just responding to dictation. You had to get up. You had to clothe yourself. There's so many pressures involved in that so-called choice. You had to dress in a certain way. you're pressed by social customs and conventions. So you make a big deal out of those kind of choices. So today when I woke up, I could decide. Should I wear silk if the weather's going to be cold, or should I wear cotton because it's going to be a little bit warmer? So I chose to put on cotton. Now do I make a big deal out of that? I chose. See the independence. No, I don't consider that independence. I just consider, you know, just being practical in this world. I don't beat my chest about having independent choice. The fact is, because of the weather, I have to think about these things. So, Bhagavad Gita and Srila Bhagavatam, don't make a big thing about choices made by prisoners while they're in prison. The real choice is get out of prison, then talk about your options. Only a fool will make a big thing of free choice within the prison. And, you know, example I like to give. In the U.S., because they have the death penalty there, before they execute someone, in states that have the death penalty, before they execute the person, on the last morning, they say, what would you like for your meal? You can choose whatever you like. Now, does that sound like great independence? Come on, you can choose! No, but that's not the reality. The reality is, a few hours after he eats, he's going to be walked to the, now it's a lethal injection. Before that it was a gas chamber, before that it was an electric chair. Before that they hung people. So, that's the reality. In 2 hours you're walking to the executioner. No, I'm choosing. I have choice. I can have whatever I wanted for my breakfast. You would not pay attention to that choice at all. So certainly, Mother Gita and Bhagavatam don't pay attention to the silly little so-called choices of material life. But people get offended by that. So I hope you can understand the situation clearly now. You don't make a big deal about the options available to someone in prison. You make a big deal about options available to those outside of prison. The liberated souls and how they serve Krishna. You make a big deal about that. When you choose between, should I chant more Hare Krishna today or should I read a bit of Bhagavatam? That nature of choice is completely different. That's the choice outside of material energy. It's a different quality of choice consciousness altogether. Because often new devotees become bewildered by that real opportunity for choice. Therefore we have a fixed schedule and fixed duties. Maybe some of you can remember in your early days as devotees, you actually couldn't handle large blocks of time because you're unaccustomed to constantly making spiritual choices. You're so used to being pushed around by material energy. So it took you some time to be able to deal with your capacity to make true choices. Shall I serve Krishna this way or serve Krishna that way? It takes us a while to get used to not being beat over the head by the modes of material nature. So sometimes it can look like persons who have started Krishna consciousness go through an apparent slump. They become withdrawn a bit, and because they're becoming accustomed to making spiritual choices. And without that false appearance of confidence when you make material choices, someone can appear to be a bit glum, a bit withdrawn. No, they're just detoxing. They're becoming free from the false pride that's tied into the process of making so-called material choices. You have to remember when you had that false pride.
I think I'll choose this. I think I'll choose that. This will fulfill me. This is a very good creative option for me.
It's a bit of hubris, a bit of pride, arrogance in that. So when you take up Krishna consciousness, that kind of arrogance disappears. And so a lot of times you can just feel kind of just empty without your ahankar, without your false ego. And you need to wait some time for the inevitable development of your ahankar, your spiritual ego. We are not advocating the eradication of all ego. Krishna does not do that in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is speaking about the eradication of the false ego. There's nothing wrong with real ego. Is everything right about real ego? Real ego involves assertion. I am Krishna's servant. What am I going to do to give pleasure to Krishna's senses? That's real ego. I gave a seminar series in Christ Church last December, and I may do it this year in Russia. Bhakti Bhava, the emotions of bhakti. That's positive assertion. But in the beginning, as we are moving away from false ego and moving towards real ego, in the middle there may seem to be a bit of slump, because the spiritual ego hasn't fully taken over yet. Meanwhile, you divest yourself of your material ego. For sometimes it can seem like you're in a bit of a gully. You haven't quite yet completely taken shelter of the spiritual platform. You're still in between a little bit, though moving towards the spiritual platform. It's like you've got one foot solidly down in the spiritual realm, and you're lifting your back foot. So you're still a little bit compromised, but all you do is keep walking forward, and you're fully on the spiritual platform. It's like you've got to get used to yourself, your real self, in Krishna consciousness. The ghost of your false ego is disappearing, and so you're just kind of, what happened to me? What do I do now? Who am I? So that can take a while. No, it's a short time, but it can seem to be for a while.
If I was to do my 6 months, please be so kind as to inform us how we best to decide from the choices that we perceive we have, which one of those choices would most please Krishna.
That is why we have the training program of Bhakti Yoga. How did Bhagavad Gita start? Arjuna was about to make the wrong choice. And he was even defending his wrong choice to Krishna. And then Krishna said, No, I like that. Arjuna recognized he was bewildered, and he, of course, approached Krishna and said, I don't know what my duty is. I've lost all my composure. Karpanya dosha pata svabhava. Pristani samudhacheta. Tamishchitam gurukitam ve shushyasthe. I've lost my composure, I don't know what my duty is. But I present myself as your disciple, surrender to you. You please instruct me. You please tell me how to make the proper choices. So Krishna explained to him Bhagavad Gita, and at the end, Krishna said, "The taste to see is a path clear. Liberate on it fully, but I told you, and do as you like. But let me warn you, the consequences." So we need guidance, Bhakti Yoga requires guidance. That's why Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Tadvidhi Pranipatena Pari Krishna Sevya. If you want to understand all these things about making proper choices, then you have to take guidance from someone who is expert in my service. It's like Chandidas, he's doing his PhD, so he has to work under the guidance of a project advisor, right? Ideally. The theory is that, you know, the guy is supposed to know all the ropes of getting a PhD done and can prod you in your research and point out areas which need more attention. That's the theory anyway. So, if even a material thing requires guidance, what to speak of a spiritual thing? She and Hitesh, they're the photography experts. So they can tell you, they can give you so much advice about cameras, photography. They have seen the truth. They can enlighten you. Well, certainly. That same thing is even more there in spiritual life. Because it's not always easy to practice spiritual life within the material world. It's a contradiction. You're dealing with a paradox. You are a spirit soul rendering spiritual service to the Supreme Soul, Krishna, but you're doing it within the material body, within the material world. So that contradiction can cause some difficulties. Therefore, Krishna advises, yes, you better do it my way. You better get some training from someone who can represent. You look at your life and see how by rendering devotional service to Krishna you're feeling pleasure, nourishment, and relief from material pangs. You're nourished by your experience of the Supreme Lord. And your pleasure is coming from connecting your senses to spiritual sense objects. That is a worthy career. Everyone should want the most stimulating, enlightening career. And you know that in any career, you have to give it discipline, you have to tolerate sometimes things don't go exactly your way. But if overall your career is working out, then that's good. Everyone likes to feel that overall my career is working out. Even in the material sense, that is so. Often when you're working a job, you spend so much of your time with people you don't like. You can't just move them out unless you own the business. You got to put, and even then, it takes a while for you to be able to do that. How many of you have taken a job and then, you know, when you were hired, you said, "Okay, I'm glad I was hired. Now here are my stipulations. I don't want this person around, that person around." How many of you ever take a job like that? Of course not. You have to take what comes. Material struggle is pointless. Spiritual struggle, there's all credit with that.
Material struggle is pointless.
Just think, what are they going to write on their tombstone? He struggled. You ever wonder about that when you see like war memorials, the names of the soldiers? A lot of times they say like, to them, you know, in a particular town they have a war memorial. To all these men, they list the names who did the supreme sacrifice. People's struggles seem so important to them. And then, when they're dead and gone, just like in the USA, every school kid is taught the glories of the Revolutionary War, throwing off the bombs of England. The patriots that climbed onto a ship in the Boston Harbor and full of tea coming from England. And they didn't want to pay the taxes on it, so they threw the tea over the ship, over the board. That's the defining moment of independence. And supposedly when the British heard this, they sent troops. You can't do this. You must take tea from us and pay the tax. So, this was the cause of the Revolutionary War. Didn't want to pay taxes. They teach a mantra to every school kid. No taxation without representation. Yeah, great offense. Yeah. The British were taxing the colonists. The colonists were not represented in the parliament. So every school kid is taught, the horrors of taxation without representation. Every school gets taught that. And you glorify the revolutionary heroes. There's one guy, see how they always think like it. They don't teach you all these things. You have your own heroes, right? One guy called Paul Revere. Every school kid learns this. Even one poet wrote a famous poem about it. When the British were ready to attack after the great offense of throwing the tea overboard in the Boston Harbor, one colonist, his job was to ride from town to town, alerting people that the British are coming, go to arms, the system was he would go to every town in the town square, he would hang one lantern if they were coming by land, two lanterns if they were coming by sea. So he went from town to town doing that, riding at midnight. So he's glorified even to this day. Mm-hmm. Great hero. Struggle. But now, what difference does it make? You know? Blair and Bush, they cooperate on everything. What is all this struggle, you know? Yesterday's enemies are today's friends are tomorrow's enemies. What's the point of all this struggle? 60 years ago, England and Germany were pounding each other to pieces. Now you can go to each country without a visa and spend as long as your time you like, and what's the point of all this? Now it's easy to see the pointlessness of struggles on the international level, but what about in our own lives? Well, that's more difficult. It's like, have you ever talked to old people about romance and relationships? They just laugh like, and we thought it was so serious. We took it so seriously. They just laugh. course, that's changing now because many movies are coming out advocating that old people should not give up. They should, you know, get into the lust process. Their lives are becoming so empty. Can you imagine in your late 60s and your 70s? Still in that kind of consciousness. Yes, that's what's going on now. Adverts in many newspapers. Don't think because you're 73 that you're beyond. Oh, call this number for counseling. We can show you it's still possible. Because people are so godless, their lives are so empty. So what is going to be on your tombstone? He struggled. She struggled. For what? To struggle for Krishna? That is glorious. That is pure eternal credit. The more genuine spiritual knowledge and genuine devotion to the Lord that you can give, the more your life is worthwhile. When the economy is going okay, they're confident, but just wait when times get rough. This confidence can be gone just like a balloon that's punctured. It can go in a second. It happens from time to time. What would have happened to the British continents if Hitler had decided to not invade Russia and instead come across the Channel? Like one of the great mistakes of history. What would have happened to the British continents? It was already low. He could have easily finished it off. I was reading how during World War II, you were lucky in the middle of the winter to get enough hot water to fill half your basin in the sink, and no heat. All the resources would be saved for the war effort. We're not doomsdayers, but we're just pointing out the reality. Life in this world is always cyclic. Things move in cycles. Boom, bust, peace, war. And those persons who you say are quite confident about what they're doing, just talk to them when they hit a wall. Economics, in terms of economic expansion, produces a false sense of confidence. That's what capitalism and the markets are all about, generating a sense of confidence. Be confident you can produce. Be confident that you can purchase, you can consume. Each side wants the other to be confident. Be confident that you can produce, so there'll be jobs for everyone. Be confident that people will buy if you should produce. During the last so-called mini-recession in the USA, there are even people urging others that it's your patriotic duty to consume, to buy, in order to buoy up the economy. Yes, things like that. Buy, don't keep your money in the bank, buy, show your faith in the economy. Is that ridiculous, I guess? So, the whole economic system today runs on confidence. You have to have confidence in the banking system, confidence that you can produce and that people will buy. Confidence that if I buy your products, I'll be satisfied. It's all false confidence, obviously. This confidence in economics so great that Voltaire once made a statement: if you see a banker jump out of the window, follow him, there's profit somewhere. You jump after him, he definitely is profit he's going after. That's what people think. They don't want to think the banker is going crazy or he jumped out a window, you know. He's had a huge loss, or even he's got lots of money, he's just dissatisfied. So it's all based on misplaced confidence. Economic system is really all about confidence. Not currency, it's about confidence. You have confidence that those notes you have in your hand, that they are actually something real. It's just confidence. You have confidence that the bank is going to do its job and give you your money. Credit cards, confidence. It's all a big stack of confidence. And every once in a while, that stack collapses. Everyone freaks out. Then they have a war or some great disturbance. And then, it's time to reassemble the confidence again. This cycle goes on and on and on. A waste of human energy. I like it when Srila Prabhupada explained that economic development is lust on an organized scale. There's individual lust, and then there's economics, which is lust on a mass organized scale. So just like when a guy goes out on a Friday night, you know, he wants to be confident, right? There's going to be some action for me tonight. Yeah. Someone's going to be waiting somewhere. I'll pick up somebody. I'll go to a club. I'll meet someone. Yeah, you want to have that confidence. Of course, you add to your confidence with some alcohol to make you limber and sociable. But you want to have that sort of confidence. Yeah. It's going to be happening tonight. Yeah. Isn't that right? So, economics is the same thing. There's profit out there. Good investment, good return. Yeah. Understand the futility of materialistic struggle and understand the complete value of spiritual struggle.
by performing bhakti yoga, devotional service to Lord Krishna, your activities, your struggles are in a completely different dimension. Even the seemingly most insignificant activity done for Krishna, seemingly insignificant, sweeping a floor or washing a pot, is just unlimitedly full of devotional possibilities for your consciousness. But the material vision can't see that. Yes.
How about the people who have no materialistic choice even? And so, for them, the question doesn't happen. How about the people in countries who have no money to actually make the choice at all?
Everybody has the limited opportunity to make choice. They're just different types of prisons. The first class prison cells, third class prison cells. So you're talking about people in the poor prisons as compared to those in the rich prisons.
Mm-hmm. And they don't even know about, say, Krishna consciousness, so they don't really have any choice at all.
Well, people in England don't know about Krishna consciousness. The same limited range of options are available to everyone. Because everyone, when they live their material life, they're concerned with eating, sleeping, mating, and defending themselves. Now, according to your resources, you'll accomplish those four purposes to different degrees of plusness. Poor people don't mate. Right.
But I mean, my point was that even in the spiritual world, people don't really have choices as such. Because, I mean, the material world is buying it in such a way that most people don't have real choices.
Well, that's what I'm saying about everyone. No one has real choice. There should be the choice made by a prisoner. Maybe you're a well-off prisoner, a political prisoner, so you have a color TV in your cell. Whereas the poor prisoner doesn't. Still, you're in prison. So think about it. Don't be afraid to struggle in Krishna consciousness. It's a meaningful struggle. What you should be afraid of is a pointless struggle. We want to rescue you from making a pointless struggle. We don't say that there's no struggle in Krishna consciousness. What we say is full of value. In dynamic activity for Krishna's pleasure, there is life, vitality. That's what we want. Dynamic activity for Krishna's pleasure. And what nourishes that dynamic activity? The direct experience of Krishna's presence. That nourishes you. Just like someone is nourished by the energy they get from eating their food. And because Krishna is there, you also taste pleasure. What to speak of feeling relief from material pains? Just a great deal, just to feel relief from material pains. No big deal for someone practicing Krishna consciousness. For others, it is a big deal, freedom from material existence. All right. Nothing else? So I have to leave tomorrow early afternoon until July 1st. Then I'll be here from July 1st until the morning of July 6th. So. Look forward to seeing all of you more at that time. Try to have a morning program tomorrow. We must do our stretch for that. It's 7:30. Okay, and so for our guests, we can speak afterwards tonight. Hear from all of our friends and say for a while. But Hare Krishna, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Oh, you don't?